was a guy named Fowler. And so we went through Fowler's stages of how faith developments or faith develops, and it coincides a lot with Piaget's cognitive development theory. Now, it's not important to me whether or not you particularly buy into the idea of Fowler's stages of faith. It's not particularly important to me whether that's of any import to you, whether you look at it any further or anything. But the idea is, here is an illustration of a developmental way of thinking about spirituality and faith and those kinds of things. And the reason why that's important, right, is because we think about and we devise interventions, right, based on those kinds of understandings in every other realm, right? So when we have a kid where there we clearly recognize that there has been abuse and neglect early on, then we're going to devise interventions that step in and try to make up some of those developmental pieces that we're missing, right? Or and it's cognitive, it's physical, it's in all of those areas. So since we already know how to do that, and we already develop those kinds of interventions, why can we not also think about spirituality in that sense and think about some ways of intervening since we're already doing that, right? Just integrating spirituality into our understanding of development. And so where we would fall, if you did buy into Fowler's idea and you did fall in there, is, you know, most of our kiddos are going to be in 1, 2, and 3. In fact, the idea is that's kind of prominently understanding of where people are in their faith is that most people aren't going to move out of a 3 anyway. And so our kids are going to be, we're going to be pushing, we're going to be stretching for them to be in a 1 or a 2. In stage 1 of Fowler's theory, the idea is that a person's faith, a person's spirituality, the way they make meaning and purpose in their lives is not really thought out. It's not really a set of ideas. It's just more of a set of general impressions that are largely gained from the caregivers in their lives. They may become involved in some religious rituals, things like that. But it's not really something that they think much about. And so in conversations with some of the girls we have at Child Haven, and you just sort of have conversations about, well, you know, how do you view life and your perspective on life and what do you believe about, what do you think about? And many of them are not past, just kind of impressions. That just sort of, I never really thought about the meaning of life. I've never really thought about any sort of philosophical ideas. And so it's almost like life is just sort of autopilot for them, just living life. And that's can easily be explained that they'd get stuck there from trauma because it's just, I'm just surviving. So what we're going to do to try to intervene then, if that's where a kiddo is we're going to have those conversations, right? So that it moves from the autopilot to the, oh, now it's cognitive. And now I'm going to think about, oh, so I have those impressions? Where did I get those impressions? And then we can start evaluating it, and it becomes a cognitive process, not just a sort of autopilot process, and we're shifting to stage 2, right? So that's what we're going to talk about is how we look at formulating the intervention, right, to be practical. Before we really delve into that, I want to introduce you to a couple of resources. One is the book by Fowler. And if this particular theory of development for this intrigues you, you can find Fowler's book. It goes into great detail, and you can incorporate that. There are other developmental theories of faith and things like that, but Fowler's is, it is a read that you probably have to read two or three times to really get into some of the depth of it. And then this book. This isn't particular to youth. It's titled Roadmap to Resilience. It's by a Donald Meichenbaum. And the subtitle is A Guide for Military Trauma Victims and Their Families. Now, what I love about this book is the way that it's organized. Right? So it's really written more for the families themselves, but it's all about developing resilience. And so he divides it up into this roadmap. So there's a section about physical fitness, right? So how do you develop physical resilience? And he actually has action steps. So he'll go, you know, there's over 100 action steps. And so these first few are your physical fitness. Do this, do this, do this. And when he says do this, he gives examples and he connects you to the research of to why he says to do this, right? So physical, interpersonal, emotional, cognitive, behavioral. And then there's a whole section on spiritual fitness, right? And so if you're looking for resources about how to make, how to use spirituality, use your faith as a means of coping, right? Because many of us, we do that, but we haven't really thought about how we would articulate how we use our faith, other than to say, you know, we pray, we rely on others, that kind of thing. But he talks about some spiritual coping and some of the specifics. Now, if you want to reach a young person who's been traumatized, they have been in counseling sessions where they are being taught coping skills. That's just a part of every reasonable therapy. And they will take things that work and throw things out that don't work, and they get burnt out and they're like, I'm not really trying anything else. None of this junk works. But if you can help them see how spirituality and faith is something that will be useful and helpful to them in terms of dealing with what they've experienced in a very practical, helpful, meaningful way, that's where we're going to reach them and that's where we're going to have movement. And so I would recommend to you this book. Now you may, you know, we're dealing with children, we're dealing with youth. And so, you know, you may have to adjust some of the things that he lists as spiritual coping, but that's a very good resource.
What was the author's name again?
Meichenbaum, Meichenbaum. Donald Meichenbaum, and it's Roadmap to Resilience, A Guide for Military Trauma Victims and Their Families. And then I want to share with you this article real quick, or a portion of this article. In everything that I read, I was most impressed by this article, in part because it was written over 20 years ago. But if you ever come across something and it puts into words kind of what you were thinking but didn't really know how to articulate? So this was written, Children in a Violent World, A Metaphysical Perspective. And it's written by James Garbarino. And I can't get the little clicker to work, so I'll be walking back and forth through this. But in the article, he talks about three perspectives for understanding the things that happen to children. But before that, he talks about three dark secrets that children learn when they're exposed to violent trauma. And the first one he talks about is that they learn that the human body is fragile. And you think, well, duh. But that reality can be traumatic in and of itself for a child. So while we were here at the conference, my wife's grandmother passed away. And so I'll be leaving as soon as we're done to head back for the funeral. But last night, I had to FaceTime with my kiddos. My two youngest are 3 and 7. And I had to be a part of the conversation of over FaceTime, which wasn't great, of, hey, your Gigi, you know, we're gonna bury her, we're going to have a funeral for her, she's gone on to heaven, that kind of thing, right? Man, and that is a, you know, life is fragile, right? But now, that's a difficult enough thing, but imagine if you're a kid, right, and you are, you're in a violent setting, which is what he talks about, and people are shot, people are murdered, and you witness or you observe that frailty in your community, in your daily life, in your home, right? That kind of violent trauma. And just what you learn this dark secret that, man, the human body is fragile. And that's a safety issue concern for children. Yeah, go ahead. The second thing he talks about is the dark secret is that adults cannot protect you. Adults cannot protect you. Now, we protect our kids from a lot of things. We provide, and we do our best to provide safe places, and we, right? But he gives this illustration of this mother. They live in a community where there's a lot of violence, and this mother is walking her little boy to school, and you know, they get to the front of the school, and the school has armed guards, right? And the teachers are waiting, and so she's walked the boy to school, you know, and in the 50 feet from letting go of mom's hand to taking the hand of the teacher, the boy is shot from a drive-by shooting. Shot right in the back of the head. And the kids that hear about that, that know about that, that observe that, learn this dark secret that adults can't always protect you. Sometimes we can't protect ourselves. And then he says, you learn that, or these children learn, that anything is possible. That anything is possible. And he gives the illustration of a woman who, she's an adult now, and for the first time ever, she's telling her story of abuse as a child, and she talks about how there were a number of times where CPS or that kind of agency came in and asked her about allegations of abuse, and she had the opportunity to tell them, right, about the way her mother was abusing her, but she didn't. And she says the reason why she didn't was because she was afraid that her mother could kill her. The dark secret. Anything's possible. Right? If people can do this to me, then anything is possible in the world that we live in. Right? And here's what really can really get to you. I'm also a person, right? If people are capable of anything, what am I capable of? And that really starts to mess with children, right? What am I capable of? But on the other side of it, he says there are three voices that we can use to make sense of violence in the human experience. There are three voices that we can use to try to make sense of those three dark secrets and those experiences. And that's what we're doing, right? Because we're talking about meaning and purpose, and we're talking about spirituality. So we're talking about how to understand some of this stuff that's so, you know, difficult to think about. And so the first thing he says is, you know, we use social science. And we've referenced studies, right? And we've referenced, you know, theories. And this is where we live, actually, though, right? I mean, we have social work degrees and counseling degrees, and this is where we live. And we're trauma-informed agencies, and so we can look at all of this through the lens of social science. And so he says, look, we see psychological wounds, right? And we intervene with that perspective then, that psychological perspective. And then the second thing, he says, you know, we use the lens of a narrative account to address philosophical wounds, right? So in a therapy session, you know, for example, as a kid is working on their trauma narrative, right? What are they trying to do? We're trying to put some words to their experience, and we're trying to make some kind of sense out of it in putting that narrative together. And it's really philosophical, you know, because you start talking about making sense out of step granddad sneaking into your room two or three nights a week and sexually assaulting you. Like, is there any way to make sense out of that, right? But it's your experience, and you've got to put it in some kind of context. And that's philosophical. And then he says, the third lens for us to look at and try to understand these things is spiritual. And maybe we don't, but the secular world misses that, right? In the opportunity for these kids. And so he says the third wound of violent trauma is not so much an injury, but a spiritual challenge. A spiritual challenge. And so we could talk on and on and on about the barriers to developing spiritually that traumatic experiences in childhood can put in the way, right? The barriers that can be put there in the way of a child, you know, being open to Christianity or believing in God or those kinds of things. But we can also view it as what an opportunity. What an opportunity. A spiritual challenge. And so if we can think about developing spirituality in these children, we think about this trauma not as a barrier to spirituality, but as an opportunity to help you learn how faith and spirituality can help you cope with that trauma and help you make sense of it. See, there's the opportunity. And that's what we're trying to do in our discussion is just see it as that challenge, a spiritual challenge. Not just the lens of psychology, not just the lens of their own personal narrative account and story philosophically, but a spiritual lens. All right, so if we're thinking about it developmentally, what's our realistic goal? Now, we started thinking about this way because for our kids, our kiddos, our teenagers, we're serving teenage girls who are going to age, more than likely going to age out of the system. So we're moving them from what in Alabama is a basic residential program to our transitional living program, which is supposed to be for us, about 6 or 9 months of you've graduated high school, you're working or you're planning your college career, and we need to get a feel for how well you can do on your own. And then maybe we put you in independent living where you're in an apartment because you can function on your own with our support and our help. To do that, they have to be at a certain level developmentally. I'm not even talking about spiritually, right? You've got to be able to function in certain levels of your daily routine and life, right? To be able to move from one piece to the next. And so we rewrote, our state has this sort of checklist of things, and so we had something from that we had sort of put in steps, right, so that we can more easily identify where they are and what they need to do next. And we had tacked on a part of that as some spiritual things, right? So we kind of hope they'll do this in stage one and this in stage two and this in stage three. And we pulled that out because it was very, it was just sort of very traditional and very, not that there's anything necessarily wrong with that, but it was just sort of, you know, we hope that they'll attend church. We hope that they'll participate more in. We hope that, and yeah, we do hope all those things, but is there a better way for us to think about action steps in moving? And so to do that, right, you have a target. You have a goal when you're thinking about, here's what this girl needs to accomplish in order to be able to be in transitional living. And here's what this girl needs to accomplish in order to be able to go into independent living. And it's not super arbitrary, right? Because we know what she's going to have to do. And what she's going to have to do. And then what she's going to have to do out in real life on her own. And all we're trying to do is help prepare her, right, to be able to function in society on her own. Well, with the spiritual development, what's our aim? What's our goal? What's our target? And I know what our aim, our target, our goal is ultimately, right? We would love nothing more than for them to embrace the love of Christ, right? And to become faithful members of the body of Christ and contribute to the spread of the gospel. I mean, yeah, no question. But while I have this girl, right, for 2-3 years as she's moving through this process, what's my reasonable goal in that? And that may not be the same thing. So I know what you want me to tell you what the goal is. But you need to look at the kid for what the goal is. And you know that. You do that already, right? Because you evaluate the developmental level of the kid. Do that spiritually. Right? How open is this kid to talking about spiritual things, religious things? If they're not at all, if they're hostile toward it, then guess what? That's the target. I just want to move them to that. That's the target for that kid. Right? And so what I'm doing in thinking about spirituality in that developmental way is instead of just having this, oh, we wish they would be, what is this kid? Where is this kid at in their spiritual journey? And what interventions can I develop that help move them in a realistic move to their next step? And so I would say that instead of some generic general aim, let's start treatment planning spiritually, right? Where's this kid and where are they going? And here's some practical ways to look at doing that. All right? So some of this comes from Meichenbaum in something he wrote about integrating spirituality into counseling and therapy practice.
Right.
And I know not all of you are going to be doing therapy, and this isn't something necessarily that has to happen in therapy, but here's the idea, right? So we want to get an idea if we're going to move where they are, right? And just the way that we evaluate where they are in their physical development and so forth, how do you do that? Well, how about an interview? How about an opportunity where we can sit down and we can talk about spirituality from an interview session? Now, so I'm going to read you a couple of the kinds of questions that Meichenbaum talks about asking just to start conversation. How often do you attend religious services and engage in religious activities? That's not out of the way. That's not intrusive or inappropriate. How do you or your family go about coping with stress? Have you been able to, these are going to be worded more for your older kids, but here's the idea, right? Have you been able to make sense of or find any meaning in what happened to you? Has your religion or faith helped you to cope with or handle the emotional aftermath of what you've been through? Do you see any possible ways that your faith or your religious beliefs could be of help to you? Have you ever wondered why me or why now? Do you see yourself as a religious or spiritual person? If so, in what way? Right? So you tell me, right? Do you see yourself as affiliated with any religious or spiritual group or community? If so, which one? How connected? Right? Has your religion or spirituality been involved in the way you have coped with what you've been through? It seems that there is a spiritual dimension to your problem. Is that correct? Would you see it as a spiritual dimension? When you're afraid or in pain, how do you find comfort and solace? I've done this one a lot. What sustains you in the midst of your trouble? You ever sat with a kiddo and heard their story, and then you thought, wow, really, you should be in much worse state than you're in. But you ever had that conversation with them? How, after going through that, how have you done so well? That's a means of evaluating their spirituality when we're thinking about it from this standpoint. And is very trauma-informed, yes. What are the deepest questions that your situation has raised for you? How has this shaken your faith? See, and you don't even have to define those terms. That's part of the point. Because the way they respond and the way they answer is going to tell you how they think about faith, spirituality, those kinds of things, which helps you, in your mind, think about where they are developmentally. Right? It's not just about, and we know this from clinical interviewing. When we're interviewing a kiddo clinically, yes, we're interested in the content, but we're looking at the underlying processes just as much, right? That's all this is. Look at the underlying processes of faith and spirituality and those kinds of things. And then this one is good. What legacy would you like to leave behind in your life? Because that gets right to kind of how we've defined spirituality, meaning and purpose, right? So, again, you know, we talked about some barriers, and there are some barriers in, even with professional code of ethics as to when and how you can talk about religion and spirituality and things like that. But within that framework, a lot of these questions are going to be very acceptable for you to use. And you're not introducing anything. You're just asking the question. And you're listening. And in your mind, you're thinking about, okay, where is this kid? What's a next step for them that is healthy, reasonable, spiritual development, and how am I going to intervene? A second way that you can do some evaluating is there are a number of self-report scales, right? So there's even a little brief questionnaire that's based off of Fowler stages. You can find it pretty easily. Search faith development scale, faith development questionnaires, and you can find those things pretty easy. And you can find them that are research-based. And, you know, if you can get a kid, some kids are not going to answer those kinds of things, but some kids will. Some kids love for you to give them more. You're not going to talk to me and ask me a bunch of stuff. You're just going to let me, and they'll do that. There is the RCOPE, R-C-O-P-E, which is a questionnaire about how you use your religious beliefs to cope with. So it takes some of those things that, like I told you, Meichenbaum uses to say, you know, these are ways that people use their spirituality and their religion to cope. Well, this questionnaire sort of goes through a number of statements about that. And so you can see, you can get an idea about how a kid has used their belief system. So for example, here's some of the statements on the R, or some of the categories of the RCOPE. Saw my situation as part of God's plan. Tried to find a lesson from God in the event. You know, like a typical scale, they rate how true that is for them or something. Tried to see how God might be trying to strengthen me in this situation. Tried to see how the situation could be beneficial. Wondered what I did for God to punish me. Decided that God was punishing me for my sins. Wondered whether God was punishing because of my lack of faith. Believed the devil was responsible for my situation. Felt the situation was the work of the... It just goes through, the RCOPE just goes through a bunch of those kinds of things. And it can give you some idea about where the older ones are in terms of the way they view spirituality and faith and religion in connection with their traumatic experiences. Is that helpful? Absolutely, that would be helpful. That's helpful just from a therapeutic perspective. There is a religiosity and spirituality scale for youth. I mean, there's a bunch of these. A quick little Google search or even Google Scholar reveals a number of these. The religiosity and spirituality scale for youth says, I do or I believe this, never, sometimes, mostly, or always. And it says, my religious beliefs help me to be happy.
I pray. I study or read scriptures. When I'm worried or nervous, my faith helps me calm down. When I need help, I go to people with my same religious beliefs. See, that helps you evaluate a connection. I attend prayer groups. Praying gives me strength when I'm upset. When I try to solve a problem, I ask God for help. I have a close relationship with God. When I do something wrong, I ask for God's forgiveness. I talk with others about my religious beliefs. My faith gives me hope in tough times. My beliefs give my life meaning. So here's a very objective way of beginning to get a spiritual profile of a kid, beginning to measure where are they at. Somebody asked me a question yesterday about how much are you letting the kid in on that you're doing spiritual development. Well, again, you know, what's your standard of practice? Are you a mental health clinician, right? Are you a licensed therapist? Are you all of that comes into play. But I think if we do this from that standpoint of what's useful and what's helpful, right? I think we can get into these kinds of conversations rather than, and especially if we're going to listen to their experience and listen to their understanding of these things and not want to jump in with that preachy mindset, but with the first and foremost perspective of, I just want to hear about where you are in your faith and your spirituality and what that means to you, if anything at all. And just in my mind then, kind of begin to formulate, well, here's where this kid is developmentally. They don't have any faith of their own. They're just living by the impressions that they got, multiple impressions from a chaotic family system that had no real thought out and taught purpose of meaning to their lives. And then we can start moving forward. So I would say you're thinking about it in your mind because you're a Christian and because you're a Christian agency and because this is part of what you do and you're concerned about spirituality, but also because you see its fundamental thread throughout all the other stuff you're doing already anyway. And then you're finding ways to help bring the kid into that conversation. And maybe a part of your aim or your goal and that target is to get the kid to engage with you very specifically and directly in writing their own spiritual development plan. Right? Maybe that's an aim or goal in and of itself, because that would be movement, right? I really love this idea of a spiritual genogram or spiritual autobiography. In fact, I would encourage you when you go back to do a spiritual genogram for yourself. Who knows what a genogram is? Okay, so it's basically like a family tree. You sort of diagram your family tree. So you say, here's me and my wife, and here are our three kids, and here's her parents and grandparents, and yada, 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 right? But on a spiritual genogram, you're then going to identify what are the religious practices of those people as much as you can? What are the religious affiliations that those people claimed, right? What was their level of commitment to those different things, right? You're just sort of exploring your spiritual heritage. And that can be a tremendous source of information for you in exploring where these youth came from in their spiritual walk and why they may or may not have a belief system that helps them make sense of the world around them. Or it may also be the case that you find that, lo and behold, one person that they were most influenced by, in the midst of all this abuse and neglect and trauma or whatever, lo and behold, there is one person that they identify in that heritage that they had a connection to that's a very religious person, very spiritually minded. And maybe that's an opportunity to find their openness to that because they have a positive thought about that person. And maybe you can help them see how maybe that person, right? Maybe that person was so kind to you and so helpful to you because they were influenced by their love of Jesus, right? And so I like this idea of a spiritual genogram or spiritual autobiography using a timeline, because what you're doing is you're helping them, right? It's helpful for you to assess, but you're helping them see the influences on where they are. And part of that developmental piece in the Fowler stuff is it's about how you know what you know or know what you believe and how you go about valuing things. And so part of the process is just getting them to evaluate how they've come to think about life the way that they have and to start evaluating if that is the correct, most useful and helpful way to think about life. And so part of these assessment tools isn't just about helping you assess them. It's an intervention in and of itself, just to get them engaged in evaluating those things. And I know most of our kiddos, there's no way they're going to do this kind of thing, but if you can get them involved, look, tracking and journaling your personal strivings and your religious activities and your behaviors that you would identify as connected to your faith or spiritual in nature or religious, and seeing how often they would report doing those things. They may be hostile toward Christianity, religion, spirituality, but in practice, if it was brought to their attention, they might not be as much, right? They just don't recognize that some of those behaviors, right, are religious or spiritual in nature or have the potential for that. All right. So here's what you wanted. Right, so when it comes to development, we got to be able to measure, and then we got to be able to move, right? So we've talked about the measuring. We've talked about sort of, and look, there's some subjectivity to it, right? I get it, but those are some ideas of just getting an idea in general of where a kid is and what their next steps need to be. And then you have to put it into sort of movement action. So what we did, if you look at your second page of your handout, so what we tried to do is pull some of all this other stuff together for us in a way of just going, and we're gonna sit down with all of our staff in the upcoming months and walk through some of this and tweak it. So this is just an idea of how you might think about practically implementing some of what we've talked about. And, you know, maybe you have to do it, maybe it's just you and this one kid, maybe it's more of in your agency, whatever, right? But here's what we did. So we took Fowler's stages, focusing on the first three, because that's where we're going to live, And then we said, okay, well, looking at, you know, this religiosity and spirituality scale, and looking at how people would use their faith to cope from what Meichenbaum says and from the R cope. And then we'd say, okay, well, how would a person in stage one or stage two be using, right, that to cope or manage life? And it would look differently. And so what we tried to do is blend those things together that we've talked about, and for ourselves, for our agency, kind of have a, all right, stage. Okay, to this thing. Here's a kid in stage one. And for us, the goal for stage one is just not blocking spirituality. Just not blocking. Welcoming spiritual interactions. Now, we're somewhat vague on these descriptors because guess what? There's enough research and stuff about spirituality that this won't even cause me a problem if it's in my formal paperwork with my state or with my accrediting agency or anything like that. So we said, all right, welcomes spiritual interactions, expresses openness to an existence outside of themselves, positively experiences spiritual gatherings or events. That, you know, and again, there's some subjectivity to that. Maybe they don't enjoy any aspect of it other than we got to get out of the house and go and do something that day. Or it's the peer group that they're connected to, or whatever. But they're not blocking it, right? They're not blocking it. So, and then maybe, all right, so we're working with that. And then maybe when that's okay, right? All right, well, what purpose does spirituality serve? So maybe we're just moving them now to this place where we can have conversations and they'll acknowledge some of, they've learned a little bit about, because we've shown them, right, how we use our faith and spirituality to cope with the difficulties of life. And maybe we've connected them to some examples. Maybe you have former residents for your agency, or maybe you have mentors, right, who can put their arm around them and can talk about how their faith help them through very similar circumstances. Maybe you can't do that, but maybe former residents can, right? People you've served in the past can, right? But what you're doing is you're helping them to make that connection of acknowledging now. So they've gone from blocking and being hostile toward any spiritual discussion to, okay, You're not shoving anything down my throat. I can have some fun in this. So we can even talk about. I know you don't want to go to church with your house parents. Is there one thing though that you could get out of going? You don't have to listen to the sermon. Plug your ears. But is there one benefit? Well, I mean, I guess it gets us out of the house. Then latch onto that. That's the one benefit, right? And that's where I'm gonna live until maybe you see a second benefit. Maybe you see a third benefit. Maybe I've moved you to the point at least now where you're not blocking, right? And then I can do some things by connecting you to others, by having some of these conversations about the usefulness of spirituality specific to coping. To get you to acknowledge that there may be a usefulness to spirituality and a people's faith. And so verbalizing or describing previous placements and what spirituality was a part of those placements, right? Because we get a lot of our teenage kids, they've moved from placement to placement. And so it can be kind of fun just to think, well, what's been your experience with the religion or beliefs of some of these other placements? That's just a, right? And Beginning to construct a belief system as a standard of decision making. Our kids are on autopilot. They're not, they are responding to their trauma. They're not thinking through why they're doing what they're doing. And so to start having conversations about and just start constructing a belief system, whether it at this point is what you think the content needs to be or not, right? It's developmental, it's movement, because it's going from autopilot to putting thought into. Challenging themselves as the reason for a belief system to exist within themselves. Number three, then, was defining or exploring personal belief system. Question the who, question the what, question the when, the where, the why, the how of their present belief system, right? That self-evaluation. Define the role of current belief system as it governs current behavior patterns. Motivated to good works by their belief system rather than the manipulation that most of them are, right? You're doing something good, it's like, what are you wanting? What are you trying to get, right? Well, I'm trying to get to go to the movies with my friend. All right, that is, when we looked at other development, right, Kohlberg's moral development, or even Piaget's cognitive development, that's a very fundamental functional cognitive operation, right? It's very fundamental. So we're doing movement, and we're thinking about it spiritually. And then four, utilizes personal belief system. So we have made significant movement spiritually with a kid if we can get them from hostility toward spirituality and religion to recognizing that when they answer one of these scales, that they have put to use some faith practices. That's huge movement. But without this kind of framework or thinking about it this way, what happens is we miss it. And the kiddo leaves our service and we think, well, you know, we hope maybe one day, right? We've planted a seed that grows. We hope maybe one day that, you know, they'll think back on us. We hope maybe one day. And that's fine. That's great. I do hope that maybe one day. But do you know how encouraging this is for my staff to be able to see small incremental movement that we otherwise wouldn't have noticed if we weren't thinking about spirituality developmentally? That's a big deal. That's a big deal. So again, maybe this is useful to you, but this isn't necessarily a, okay, here's how you do it. But in thinking about our girls, and in thinking about the information that we've talked about, here's a way that we started looking at where are girls in our program and what is our next step for them. Does that make sense? So this is an example of how you might take some of this stuff and think about applying it. I know we are out of time, and I thank you for your attention. I would say you're not going to develop spirituality in anybody else if you neglect your own spirituality. So you might even consider how do you do these same things in your staff? Right? I need spiritual growth and support, especially considering secondary trauma. And if trauma affects these kids spiritually, if we look at it through that lens, secondary trauma affects your and my spiritual life. The way that you engage with these kids in this is trauma-informed. It's the same interactions you teach your parents, right? The environment, we need to collaborate with youth ministers and with churches so that we're not just, hey, here's our kids in your youth program. But they need to be trauma-informed. We have that knowledge. We need to find ways to educate and teach them and help them maybe be able to slow down some and have reasonable expectations of our kiddos. And so that's all that I have. Thank you for your attention.